Good morning, Tucson. Welcome to the Jump In Tucson Show and specifically the Engagement Hour. I am Ted Maxwell, your host. Matt Neely sitting behind the glass, keeping us on time and target. And we look forward to a great conversation today. In a few minutes, I'll be bringing City Council member Paul Cunningham, representing the representative of Ward 2, on to talk all things Tucson and to talk about his path to getting engaged and getting involved. Remember, the purpose of this show is to encourage everybody to get involved. And one of the ways that you'll probably hear us talk about today is the power of your vote and the power that that can change and being an informed voter. Remember, we are a nation bound by shared values of freedom, liberty, and equality. And with that comes some rights and responsibilities. And for some of us, that includes service to our country and our community. But it is important for us all to be engaged in some way. And with that in mind, I don't want to ignore the issue of the event this weekend, this attempted assassination on Donald Trump. I feel real strongly that while we've got a lot of responsibilities, civic engagement is one, being involved in the discussions and the arguments and the disagreements on what's best for our community, what's best for our country, what's best for our government and all of the citizens. But the one thing I feel incredibly strong about is we are not a nation that can accept political violence. We didn't accept it in the past. And those who say it's part of our history, it's not the part of the history I think we embrace. Obviously, there's been attempts and successful attempts previously in our country. We can go back to Ronald Reagan. We can go back to Gabby Giffords. And now we can talk about Donald Trump. The thing that concerns me the most right now and is the fact that we immediately jump to the sides on who's behind it, who did it, what happened, who's driving the shooter, who set the shooter up. I'm here to tell you, please let the investigations play out. Now, there's pros and cons to the investigations. There are people that will and won't be forthcoming with all their information. It's not a simple process. But the fact of the matter is jumping to conclusions on either side is not going to be beneficial. Let's go back to the Reagan assassination in March of 81. Did some research again yesterday. There were no conspiracy theories on who it was. The initial focus was what's wrong with the shooter and what's their motivation. I mean, Matt, you're nodding back there, and sure. I think we're in agreement that Gabby Giffords, same thing. There may have been a tinge of, was it politically motivated? But nobody jumped to any big conspiracies that the Republicans were behind it or anybody else. And
slightly beg to differ with you on the Giffords one. But.
Well, you can put that out there because there was obviously some concerns. But either way, I'd say fairly quickly, it unraveled to a point where sure. You saw somebody who had emotional and mental issues and that probably was not as much politically motivated.
Right. I saw a headline yesterday, I think in the local paper, it says we're looking for motivation. Well, obviously the primary motivation is they wanted to assassinate somebody.
Absolutely.
And that's the case in all the things. Now, as you say, when you dig deeper, was it to impress an actress? Was it because of other deep-seated problems? That all has to play out, and it does, and it will.
And we need to let the investigations play out. I think we all know that investigations have issues. They're problems. It's really unique. When I first got in, Matt and I were talking about how can we best ensure that the investigations are truthful, forthcoming, and accurate. And it's very difficult. And I mentioned to you that in the Air Force, whenever we have an accident, there's actually two separate investigations. The one that starts immediately is the safety investigation. The safety accident investigation. And then later you have the accident investigation. And what I'll tell you is the first one's done purely to try to get to the immediate needs of why whatever happened, whether it was an aircraft crash or one that resulted in ejection or try to solve that problem so we can prevent from it happening again if there was something there. Mm-hmm. And those, everybody who's interviewed is basically provided during that interview with they're not held accountable for what they say and when they come out. Because the fact of the matter is that investigation wants to get to the whole and entire truth. Now, the accident investigation that comes on later also has that purpose. However, at that point, people are starting to be put under oath and there's going to be ramifications. And the difference between the two, the accident focuses on the actual cause of the accident, the safety one. The accident one focuses on and attributes blame. And the interesting thing is almost always leadership is found to be a contributory cause to the accident. It's either because of the environment, because of the lack of oversight, lack of proper guidance, but leadership is already there. And I think sometimes too often in our world now, when we go back and look at these things, we don't look at the whole scenario and how it plays out. And if, you know, as you said, there was more to the Giffords shooting, there was more blame. So I'll just say that's kind of a migration from when Reagan, I don't think there was any. There was no suspicion on who was behind it. You let it play out. But
to your point, it probably, it was a while ago, 4 decades ago, you know, eventually it did
we
come
young.
Out. I don't remember how many days or weeks it took to get to the, I was trying to impress Jody Foster part.
Right. Going back in history sometimes is tough, but what we've got to understand is the swing of political positions in our society have always changed with going to the extremes and then coming back and then going to the, you can look through time in history. You look between about 1872 through almost till the early 1900s. We were at this point where you had extremes. I mean, the political rallies were bombarded with people throwing tomatoes, throwing stuff. There was probably some fights. There was a whole bunch of that going, but it wasn't to the level where we have it now with the immediacy. And it's something I think we need to understand in this world. And this is where it gets back to my point of the most important thing you can do is vote. If you don't like the dichotomy we've got, if you want to get back to more of the Reagan era where 80% of a negotiation is good, if you get that, you're a winner, then you got to just take mind in consideration. I know Chris has talked about this a lot on his show too, is you don't have to give up your values to find a candidate that can get stuff done. And right now, instead of taking 80% of a win, we're in a bind that it's 100% my way or nothing. And that's on both sides of the aisle, I believe. And when you have that, then that's where you get to the point where it becomes argumentative. It becomes more vitriol. It becomes divisive. We've heard both President Trump and President Biden bring up the concept of unity and trying to bring people back. And that's the case. So I want to close here because I don't want this to be about today's show. But Matt, I think that's what we need to really hope will come out of this is we can start putting some of that away and realize political violence does not belong in American society. And that's even not just related to campaigns. What we're talking about on these assassinations were related to political leaders, but in all aspects of our protests.
How often do you say it? We can make changes with a pen and a ballot. It's pretty cool. And unfortunately, there's some unbalanced people out there. And that's why we have security in place to deal with that. But that's what makes us different as Americans, right?
Absolutely. And those are the perfect words of Matt Neely to take us into the break. When we come back, we'll have Councilmember Paul Cunningham with us. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Free rolled a conversation, and I really appreciate the wisdom behind the glass from Matt Neely because he always adds a lot to the conversation. And I thought his closing comments were right on the mark. But today, we want to get to talk to Paul Cunningham, city council member representing Ward 4. Paul, as many know, sorry, Ward 2. I don't want to get Nikki Lee upset at you. So Ward 2, I got it right on the original intro. He's the son of the former state senator George Cunningham and lifelong Tucson advocate Margie Cunningham. A lot of us like to tell him that that's his greatest asset. But the fact of the matter is this show is about getting engaged and getting involved. I've mentioned sometimes that's being just the best citizen you can be, being a voter, being informed, and take care of your civic responsibilities. But for a lot of folks, it's service. could be in the military. It could be in law enforcement. It could be running for an elected office. It's leadership of nonprofit organizations, helping people, helping citizens, getting involved in your schools, getting involved. There's a lot of different ways to get engaged, and that's what we're targeting. But we're going to spend the first section here with Paul, and he might start rolling his eyes, but I really want to go over all of the different service and things he has done about being engaged. It's not just being about a long-term city council member. And we'll cover all the details of that. But Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Ted.
I appreciate you being here. You obviously are a native Arizona and a longtime member of the community. But I think there's a lot of your story that people haven't heard, and that's your engagement and your service. You started out, working as with the probation office?
Actually, before that, I worked at, I'd say that the start of public service for me goes back to my sophomore year of high school, man. I was in student council and got elected senior class president as a senior. Now that sounds cool or whatever, or probably not cool these days, but
it depends what your school is like, yeah. Who they wanted to vote in charge.
But at the time, I just thought it would be cool to be able to say I was senior class president. I didn't really understand the commitment that it required until later on in the year when you're running all over town in your 83 Ford Ranger trying to pick up decorations for the prom, or you're helping a dude get his cap and gown on the last day before graduation, or you're setting up for graduation, recruiting a speaker. So all those things went on, and that was really the true beginning of public service. I don't know if you guys remember Vince's Italian Food there on Speedway with the giant sign. And it's another thing that came up later in life, because Demon Klinko is this huge advocate about historic signs, and we actually went and tracked down the Vince's sign, and now it's just who can restore it and where to put it. But the bottom line is that I worked there at night and was a regular student, a student athlete. At Rincon High School, I was just a regular guy, and my parents. My dad at the time wasn't even elected yet. My dad was still a bureaucrat. He was the vice president of the University of Arizona.
Okay.
And my mom was an attorney. And my grandmother was... My grandmother's story is interesting. She came here after the war. Her husband was a dentist in the Air Force. And they were actually in New Mexico. And he, he worked with some of the scientists at Los Alamos, and became an amateur and junior scientist the rest of his life. Those were the guys he hung out with, was all the U of A science professors and stuff. And she was a bit of a unicorn early on. I mean, she had a college degree in 1940 as a woman, and that was not very often. And in 1961, she said, gee, I'm 42 years old and my kids are in, elementary school or higher, and I'm bored and I think I'm going to go to law school. And so she went to law school. She was mentored by Judge Alice Truman, one of the first female judges in the history of Arizona, who was actually younger than her. And my grandma ultimately became a judge. She graduated in the same law school class as John Kyle. And, that was my Tucson story, and they'd gotten here for a number of different reasons, but the main thing was I think they were going to move to Benson after the war, and my grandma lasted 8 weeks, and they moved to Tucson and bought a house in it. They lived in Indian Ridge, believe it or not. My mom grew up in Indian Ridge, so that was my Tucson thing. So when I graduated high school, I was like, I'm going to go to the U of A. I was a lifelong University of Arizona fan. I loved Tucson more than anything. It was my favorite thing to do. I probably loved Tucson a little too much, and was not really ready to be as disciplined as you can to be a very reliable college student. So after one semester of what I would call subpar academic performance, I joined the United States Army. And I'd always planned to serve at some point. I just, that was the good time to go. And I joined the 8th Battalion, 40th Armor, the same reserve unit my dad was in.
And where was that based?
They were in Fort Achuca at the time.
Okay.
Believe it or not, in the 70s, they were over on Silver Lake where the bridges are. That was their FTX area. That was the armor. The armory is still there.
Right. So no, it's still on Silver Lake, and now it's under the Arizona International or the Arizona National Guard, I believe.
Yeah, but that was my spot. The headquarters was actually there during the week, but we'd go down and drill in Sierra Vista, and it was a cool thing to do.
So that little start turned into 12 years, I would believe about 12 years of total service.
I think it was nine. It's a little less. It's 92 to, it's like December of 92 to, it's February of 92 is the day I shipped out for basic, and I ETS'd October 1st, 2001, 20 days after 9/11. So it's just weird time where a whole bunch of guys that I served with had gone to First Desert Storm, and a few to Somalia, and a whole bunch of guys who I served with towards the end went to Afghanistan and Iraq after I left. And so I've got a bunch of friends that are vets in those circles these days. I've gotten to see kind of some of their struggles, some of their successes, some of the things they've learned and not learned. But I have nothing but love for my experience in serving in the Army. And when I got back, I worked my way through school. I worked midnights at Circle K. I got a job at the YMCA as the youth sports director. That was my first professional job when I graduated high school.
In Ward 2 as well.
When I graduated college. I wrote the grant. I helped write the grant and build the roller hockey rink that's still there.
Well, we'll definitely get back to some of the your love for sports and the involvement with young kids and adults still staying active. But you also, so you've worn the military uniform. You've also worked 12 years as a veteran of the Pima County Juvenile Probation Department.
Yeah, so I was at YMCA, and there were a lot of kids who needed to get their community service hours. So they'd come in, and I'd kind of say, hey, I'll help you get your community service hours. Can you help me clean up the pool? Can you run the score table at basketball? Can you do this? Can you do that? And as I signed off on hours, POs would come around. One guy was Ronnie Sloss. He's my good friend. He came in one time. He's like, you know, man, it was him and another guy named Mike Bushy. And both of them had interacted with me quite a bit. And they said, you know, dude, you'd make a great PO, man. You should apply. So I did. That's how that went down.
So you served effectively there. I think you mentioned when we were talking or a little earlier that you've knocked on doors ready in uniform to get bad, you know, to...
Yeah, so I've worn the badge and knocked on doors, and you know, I worked field and did investigations, and it was a different time. There were some pretty intense people on juvenile intensive probation back then. I mean, nothing. I don't want to act like I was some like superhero or anything like that.
No.
Like, I was more just a case manager 99.99% of the time. But you do go through a bunch of different trainings that peace officers go through, defensive tactics, all those other things, and you've got to be alert, and you've got to be self aware, and you've got to be organized, and you've got to be able to communicate and help people get to the right spots.
And don't lose the fact that it is service. And one of the other levels of service that we've talked about in this show quite a bit is that of being an educator.
Yeah. So
so what led to the decision to go into being a teacher?
Well, I didn't really want to be an elected. I had like my dad.
We'll talk about that later. So that's up for a good argument.
I became a teacher because I was already an elected. I couldn't be a probation officer and an elected. You can't knock on someone's door who's on probation and go, hey, man, I'm violating your probation, but make sure you tell your parents to vote for me. You just can't do it. Just doesn't work. It doesn't mince right, man. So the bottom line was that I had to make a career switch. I had a master's in social work. I thought about going.
Where'd you get that master's from?
I don't really want it to. The school that in the Tucson component.
No, we can say it, Arizona State University.
It was at Arizona State, but I have my bachelor's from U of A. I'm U of A tried and true.
We know.
Though I will say of all the most, one of the most hated guys in Arizona lore is this guy, Kyle Dodd. And he's their radio basketball guy now. And we've become kind of friends on Twitter. He's a good dude. I'll vouch for him, man. And so I can't knock ASU too. I used to be Mr. like, oh my God, ASU is the worst. Let's cut a canal around Tempe and kick it out of Arizona. Like that was kind of, I joked around about stuff like that. But for real, you know, that's a great rivalry. It's a healthy group. It's good to see, you know, they've got Pat Tillman's one of their guys. I mean, you really can't turn your back on stuff like that. You've got to respect those things.
Well, and I always say, and I'm a diehard U of A Wildcat supporter, you know, that's where my MBA came from. But you got to root for ASU when we're not playing them, because you know what? That makes our victory over them that much more important.
True.
It helps.
True.
If they're 0-13, you might get some, you know, feel good out of it. But the fact of the matter, it doesn't count anything for what we've got. So
just there's certain times I just can't do it, man.
I know. That's the case. So we've got a little bit more to cover on your journey to being an elected official, but I hope you come back with us on 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. And with Paul Cunningham, we'll dive into the issues facing Tucson. Good morning, Tucson. You're listening to 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. And this is Jump in Tucson, the engagement hour. That's Matt Neely behind the glass, making sure that I get my morning dose of Bruce Springsteen. And so it keeps me in a jovial mood. And with us today, we have council member Paul Cunningham, the representative on the city council for Ward 2. Paul, you were appointed back in 2010. That was about the same time you said you started looking at needing to get into or your desire to get into teaching and take that role, which both elected service and teaching are things that I consider being involved in your community. So how did that play out before we get into the issues of Tucson?
So really quick, I didn't really want to do politics, and when Obama gave his speech at the 04 convention, I got reengaged. That was the main reason. And in 07, there was a bit in the Democratic side. My family was a longtime Democratic Party thing. There was a split between Hillary and Obama, and I was all about Obama. I just identified with the dude. He was about the same age. He played basketball. I just identified with him. So I got involved back in politics, but I wasn't sure. I got elected to my to the PCPOA, Premier County Probation Officer Association, which is their union, and I worked on that. I did some advocacy. I got appointed to the Juvenile Justice Commission, so I did some advocacy, and then I even got. I was president of my neighborhood association.
Hey, admit it, it was in your blood.
Well, I was president of my neighborhood association, and Rodney Glassman was my councilman. He decided to run for senator. And I said, all right, I'll put my resume in. And it was pretty apparent right away that I was probably going to get picked. There were a couple people who were not so sure, but I was everybody's at least second and a few people's first. It was kind of good. So we went through that process. And I got to tell you, there's a couple things that were going on. One, from a maturity factor, the same things that kind of got me out of college, I probably didn't really understand the commitment you make as a public servant at that time. And a lot of people I don't think do. And that's why I think we have that age limit for president at 35 years, and it probably makes sense. But the bottom line was I couldn't be a PO anymore, as I stated in the previous segment. And, but, you know, many of the legislators, and growing up around the legislature, because my dad had been two terms, are teachers. So I went and got my teaching certificate and became a teacher. And it was a real easy segue. I'd actually been a safe school probation officer for a while. So I'd been on a middle school campus. So it was a real easy switch. And, you know, there's a learning curve, though. When you teach middle school, that first year is rough. But after that, it gets going. So that was kind of how that went out. The other thing I want to say is big shout out to Matt Neely, dude. Your bumper music choices are outstanding, brother. I appreciate you, man. Giving him the old
following Ted's cues. That's it. That's what Ted likes.
That is 100, brother. Well, I'm going to send you guys some stuff for next week. Because, you know, there's a few tweaks, but yeah, it's awesome.
Okay. 18 songs. You can even send it in. You know, I don't know if Chris will play your list.
All, you know, you do know that local MC Cash Lansky and I wrote a rap about Tucson.
And I don't know if you've got a video of that, but I've got a feeling you do. So we may have to go there. So now you've been on the council. You were appointed in 2010 to fill Rodney Glassman's shoes, and literally the size of those shoes are big. So yeah, that was it's a joke for everyone out there. If you know
well,
Rodney,
but he does I was also he was only in there 2.5 right. years. I was really in there to fit. Phil Carol West shoes.
Absolutely.
And
Carol was a long time.
She chaired one of my campaigns. She's
water,
one of the most
some of the biggest issues.
She's one of the most excellent people I've ever met.
And Carol's just an incredible lady. There's no doubt about it.
Now she's my constituent.
Yep. So you've won re-election in 11, 15, 19, and most recently in 23.
In 23 I won every single ward.
Yeah, I know you were proud of that. That was one of your goals going into it.
Including 4.
So, I won't tell Council Member Lee that happened, but we'll leave it that way. What are the issues right now? I've given you a list of issues I want to talk about. What do you think the big issues
are? There's
short-term
and long-term. In managing any city and municipality, there's short-term and long-term. We have short-term and long-term things we have to do. Right now, we're going to face a little bit of a budget squeeze. And believe it or not, I think the mayor's done a really good job in going after that federal money to augment some of the things we do to fill those gaps. And as a result, we're one of the few municipalities and counties in the state right now that isn't facing this huge, like, overwhelming deficit. We've got a deficit of maybe 20 mil on 1.6 bill. I mean, it's just not 1.6 billion with a B over 20 million with an M. So it's not this like overwhelming gap. I mean, when I first came on the council in 2010, coming out of the recession, we were looking at 70 mil against 580 mil. We were looking at a 10 to 15% budget squeeze. Now we're looking at a 3 or 4%. Even less, like a 1% budget school, 1.5%, 2%. So it's a little easier to manage, a little easier to do. The problem is that we still have this huge part of service delivery that has to be there. The short-term things are always the same things, and they're boring. People want their garbage picked up. People want the grass to be green at the park. People don't want trash on the streets. We have a unsheltered epidemic in this country that everybody's trying to tackle. We're in a very higher disadvantage here in Tucson, considering we definitely are a place where it's easier to access fentanyl than some of the other cities around the country. So we have these issues that we can't pretend don't exist, but let's be honest about kind of what the challenges are and how we tackle them. I think some of those things go back to just how county and city government is structured. Here's a good example. So Maricopa County's budget is $3.8 billion. That's less than $900 a person. Pima County's budget is $1.9 billion. That's about $2,000 a person. So think about that. And that's because they're providing a lot of municipal services, and that's okay. It isn't that there's some conspiracy or Pima County was evil or anything. They were responding to their constituents over a 50 or 60 year period, and it morphed into where we are. You can't call up Rex Scott and go, "Oh, this is your fault," or you can't. That's not right. That's not really what happened.
On those constituent services, Paul, because you just mentioned it, do you believe there's duplication between Pima County and the city of Tucson that can be improved through either a more regional approach, or that the municipalities could take on in their entirety?
I think municipalities should take it on in the entirety. That's worked better for Maricopa County, and now that we're over a million people.
And that's a great point, and I agree with you. I think there's some benefit to that, because duplication is just...
Well, you're also giving local control. You're giving a more proximity for zoning issues. You get to have... I mean, that's kind of what you run into when you have this large piece.
So how do you address the 36% of our population in Pima County that lives in unincorporated Pima County?
So we made that mistake 24 years ago when we said, we don't want you to incorporate, we want you to
annex
into Tucson. We don't need to do that. We need to say, hey, go be self-reliant, get your local control, or even annex into Marana, annex into Oro Valley. I want those towns to succeed. I mean, there's no issues. I have no issues with doing stuff like that. There's no reason that we shouldn't do stuff like that. That Catalina Foothills is its own town or city, would probably have a better per capita budget than any other city in the United in Arizona. So there's a bunch of different things we can do, but I definitely encourage incorporation. Again, that's going to take some time. I'm not going to run around and say that the county's wrong or that the people who don't want to be incorporated are wrong. I'm just going to say, look into it. It may benefit you. We've got some people out in Tankaverde Valley right now who are like, well, we'd like to look into that because we want some self-rule with our zoning. The issue is that they don't have any retail out there. So they're not going to be able to generate those state share revenues that they really want. So there's different pieces to it.
Well, remember, as an incorporated town, they will get a percentage of the state share revenues, even if they aren't generating it.
It wouldn't be enough. They've got to get 2 pennies on the dollar for retail, and that retail has to have a spend of a certain amount per person.
I don't disagree with you on that, but I know they're still looking at it. Obviously, incorporation failed in Vail for the second time, overwhelmingly, mm-hmm. which personally... I was disappointed, because I agree. We leave money on the table from the state shared revenue, and there's local control. The folks, we're going to talk about RTA later, the folks in Vail go, well, what about us for RTA? Well, you don't have a seat at the table right now because you're not incorporated. And that gets very difficult, because Rex Scott represents all those districts. And if RTA next doesn't go through, the county unincorporated parts of Pima County are going to be the ones that are worse impacted. And we'll get there later. I don't want
It's just that's part of the visiting process that gets us in the short term that can help us with some of those things so we don't have duplication. Right. I don't know what the best thing is. I don't know if you put if you put the parks in the county and you put the sewage in the city or backwards or whatever. There's a bunch of stuff we can do. We've just got to figure out the best path on that. The other piece I'd say is that the long-term things is kind of about water feature, water pieces, reservoirs, some things. I mean, it's kind of amazing to me that Maricopa County has this entire Salt River project that gave them recreational areas, that gave them water supply, that gave them all this stuff, and Tucson doesn't. And when you consider the Mount Lemmon runoff and the fact that we get an extra 3 inches of rain a year, we probably could be just as water neutral as they are long term and have some of those same attractions. And it would probably be if we could. The trick is to do it so it's very ecologically responsible and actually augments our creeks and rivers.
So how do we get past the Pima County, and I'm going to call it Pima County, I won't just say Tucson, I'll say Pima County, desire not to have any growth. The thing that took Vail down was they were afraid of growth coming to their community. They wanted to live in a rural community. And the fact of the matter is growth, to Ted's opinion, it's not a bad word, but that's going to take visionary. And if we were to do something like you're talking about, that would help us long-term water, we can do it with growth as well. It's not one or the other.
So it's the same conversation that when you're 22 years old and your awesome cousin, my awesome cousin Mark, who kind of like whenever I needed to go something I didn't really want to tell my dad about, but everybody's got an uncle or cousin or aunt like that, right? So my cousin Mark told me, look, Pa, there's good debt and bad debt. Don't run up your credit cards and don't buy a washing machine on time. But, you know, your house, you can have debt on your house as long as it's not a certain percent. And so my dad tried to tell me that. Of course, he didn't listen, but my cousin Mark told me and it was all good. The same thing goes with growth. There's good growth and bad growth. And if you're fringing out and we're sprawling, that's not necessarily good growth. We want to grow up. We don't want to grow out. And there's ways to do that.
That's we're going to leave it right there because that leads to a couple conversations is when we come back because we always say that. But when it comes down to actually doing it, we just don't make it happen inside the confines.
I know. You're talking about height restriction overlays. We can talk about it.
We will. We'll go there when we come back. That's the voice of Paul Cunningham, City Council member representing Ward 2. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to Jump In Tucson, the engagement hour. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, with Paul Cunningham, the City Council member for Ward 2 in the city of Tucson. Pretty brisk conversation in the last section, Paul, so let's keep that rolling. We talked about the difference between sprawl and infill. And to me, that means you've got to be willing to grow up or you grow out, one of the two. And there are a lot of folks that don't, you made the statement, sprawl is not, in your opinion, good growth. So how do we get past the arguments and the fight that happens every time that the city of Tucson tries to propose some height restrictions or heights allowing more growth in height throughout the community if really good growth is accomplished by infill?
Well, it's a fine line, and you want to preserve our neighborhoods. They're kind of what makes us special. It makes us a cool and groovy place to live. I mean, let's embrace that piece, and the work that the neighborhood activists have done over the last 30 years have made some cool things about Tucson. The bottom line is, though, if we want to get the density where we want to get it, we're going to have to do some things where we set up some type of algorithm that takes a higher building nearby or a rooftop height nearby, sets up a setback, so it's formulated every time. So if you've got your zoning, your building height is set up so that as long as the setback's right, it's A, not invasive, but you can go as high as you need to go. And I think we can do that. I think I just toured through Ireland. Ireland stuff was built with walkability because it was all built in the 1840s and 50s when one out of nine people had a horse there. So you go to Ireland, right? And you have all this walkability and density and you're thinking, well, why can't we be like that? Well, you know, 74% of our growth occurred during the car boom, man. So we're a car town, unfortunately. And I wish we could figure out a way to reverse that more, but we can't. So we have to figure, if we can, it's going to take like 50 years. The only way to get that reversal is to have that density, and that's to go vertical. And so we're going to have to find opportunity to be able to do those things. And so that's kind of what I'd say to the vertical piece. Is that,
So I agree with you. The challenge I think we still face, and you know it as well as anybody, you are in Ward 2. You are the heart of, where's your office relative to downtown Tucson?
Oh, like 25 minutes away.
Yeah, it's a long way. We are a large city footprint-wise in square mileage for the size we are. And so we've got over 500,000 citizens of Tucson spread out over a large area.
531.
And I think that's a conversation we have to have, though. But we've got to get out of the lack of growth mentality. Why? Because growth, opportunity, some business attraction will bring more jobs. And that's how I believe the city of Tucson can best impact the poverty situation we've got right now.
But there's some stuff that kind of Nixus, man. We've got this bizarre insurance requirement for townhomes and condos that makes it less easier to build. That's a state level law, and those are some things that is some medium density growth that we can't do infill wise. We've got some other things that are there that probably we need to take a look at. It's really interesting to see what's going to happen at Pioneer. It was bought by a California firm, and kind of whether or not they're going to keep that office space. So I think there's other things we have to do too, but you're right. Absolutely. That dialogue about an overlay of Midtown, especially at least the piece from it, it can go, if you think about it, where are our buildings of over five stories? Well, they go from Wilmot off of Broadway all the way to downtown. If you think about where the original Great Western Bank building, it's 5151 Broadway now.
But,
if you think about Great Western, you think about the old KRQ building, which is now Bank of Tucson. You think about the Viscount. You think about where PiCorp is. And you go back and forth. That strip is where you can get that density. And so that's kind of what I'd want, is like the Great Broadway overlay would be a cool way to go that way.
Okay, so we've talked about that. I think that's incredibly important. I think on the condo and townhome front, it can be addressed through council actions. So I hope you'll step forward and take some leadership on that as well. There's a lot of things going on there. So let's talk RTA next. Okay,
sure.
RTA 1, this year's the 10th anniversary of the streetcar. Okay, there's going to be an event Saturday morning, and the streetcar, which had failed previously, was passed as part of RTA. And sometimes I think we lose perspective of the benefits that the city and the county and the region have received from RTA 1. RTA Next is a big thing that comes up all the time on the city council. What are your concerns, and what are you looking for to really take it to where you will be a supporter of?
So the big piece, and first of all, let me just say that I've never backed out. I've kind of bobbed and weaved about the RTA because I want it to be a good deal for the city. I've said that very consistently. And at the same time, there's the non-weighted voting and stuff like that, just the fundamental pieces. But at the end of the day, if you just look at, let's forget the nuances of those things. And let's talk about, what does Tucson need? One of the things you have to ask yourself, does Tucson, Arizona, the city of Tucson, Arizona, need more roads, or does it need its existing roads to be fixed up? And I guarantee you, dollars to donuts, 9 people out of 10 are going to say the second. 9 people out of 10 are going to say, we need to be able to upkeep our roads at a very good pace and stuff like that, because the way they heat up, the way we get the monsoon, the way we get 9 inches, we get 70% of our rain in a 4-week period, and then it heats up to 120 degrees. And that's a challenge that other cities don't have to get killed on. So the bottom line is that the only way we can get to that point is if we have that built into the RTA package. Not necessarily, I know there's some prohibitive laws that it's just maintenance, but if we can look at road reconstruction and road reimagining as part of what we're doing, then yeah, it's going to be a good deal.
Well, thank you for the setup on that one. It's at least, I don't know if you're going to put that there or not, but at the last RTA board meeting, one of the things that I proposed is that we look at a categorical element of the next RTA called arterial reconstruction. All of our arterial roads, and I believe the city of Tucson has said there's about $250 million in required maintenance for the arterial roads alone.
100.
Okay. If we can establish this arterial reconstruction category, which high probability you may see me suggest a little bit more forward in the next RTA meeting later this month, it will put money that will allow us to truly not create a whole new road. It's not like going in changing Broadway from 4 to 6 or adding roads. It's just going in and taking down the top layer of the road reconstruction and basically rehabilitating it to give it a long-term fix for some of our arterials, because whether we like it or not, the size alone means we are going to always have cars. So you have to have, and we've talked about this a lot before, efficient ways to get effectively and quickly across town without playing, is the road going to be in enough shape that we can't effectively make it?
And look, if we've got that type of commitment for our roads, that solves a huge problem for us, because long term, that those are a big part of our needs. We, when I took over, man, when I got first on the council, we had lost our budget and like 75% of the roads were failing. We've cut that down to like 30%, but we're ready for round two.
But the arterials are still in need. And that's my point. And we can get there.
Because we fixed them and now they're dilapidating again. Right. And we always, it's a constant thing. It's boring, but we have to be fixing the roads all the time.
All right. That's Councilmember Paul Cunningham. I appreciate you saying that there's a road for get you on board with RTA next. Doug Martin, sorry about not taking the call, but Councilmember Cunningham knows that we believe strongly in the need for ease of business. Not business friendly. Everybody's business friendly. Ease of business. You've been listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and this has been Jump in Tucson. Tomorrow you'll have Grant Kruger at 9 o'clock.